Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Family Sanctuary, a show that inspires living the gospel message in word and deed within our families. And now, Family Sanctuary with hosts Mary Ann Jepson and Peggy Hartshorn.
Hello and welcome to the Family Sanctuary. I'm Mary Ann Jepson, your host, and I'm really happy to have you with us today because our topic of discussion is one that, as a Catholic therapist, I believe is of critical importance to Christian families living in a hyper-sexualized world. I don't mean to say, really, I guess, that this is of importance only to Christian families, because whether or not you're Catholic, a Christian of any denomination, or a non-Christian, the topic we're going to discuss, which is the pervasive problem of pornography, is certainly something that you are not immune to. It's a problem that's really affecting all corners of our culture and is having catastrophic effects on individuals and families alike, Christian or not. The most recent and devastating headlines, I think, to bring this scourge to light once again is the scandal of Josh Duggar confessing his pornography addiction and his membership to the Ashley Madison website. And if you're not even aware of what the Ashley Madison website is, it's an online so-called personals and dating destination for casual encounters, married dating, and so-called, I guess you'd say, discreet encounters and extramarital affairs. Basically, it's about married people hooking up with other married people or not to have affairs in a so-called discreet fashion. So you can see the real devastation that pornography can have on families just by what the Duggars have showed us. But I have the privilege and the great honor to be with so many couples, good Catholic couples, Christian couples who struggle with pornography as well. So I really am honored to bring in our guest today, who is an expert in this field. He is a priest expert, which is kind of an extraordinary thing. And my guest is Father Sean Kilcawley. I'll give you a little bit of his background. He is a speaker, educator, and contributor to Integrity Restored, which is a website dedicated to helping families win the battle against pornography. And he has also been an expert guest on the topic of pornography for Catholic Answers Live and EWTN and other media outlets as well. He graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point and earned a Bachelor of Science in Middle East Foreign Area Studies, and served as active duty in the infantry as an officer. When he left the military, he began studies for the priesthood and was ordained a priest of the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska in 2005. There, he served 4 years as a parochial vicar and a high school teacher, and then sought advanced studies in pastoral theology, receiving a licentiate in sacred theology from the John Paul II Institute for Marriage and Family Life in Rome. And he now serves as director of the Office of Family Life and Evangelization for the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska. Welcome, Father Sean.
Thank you, Marianne. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
Thanks. So I want to be sure that I got that correct. You have a licentiate in sacred theology. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Good. I didn't want to have my facts wrong on that. So I'm just so thrilled that there is a priest in this country, and I don't know how many others there are like you, but I suspect very few, who really have taken on this issue of the scourge of pornography, the problem, however you want to identify that and describe that. It so rapidly leads to addictions in so many people who get started just out of curiosity. What if we started out by really defining pornography? Because I think that some people have the idea that it's only images.
Well, there's the catechism definition of pornography, which I wish I could quote you verbatim.
I have it if you'd like me to read it, but it's kind of lengthy.
That?
Okay, I'll read it. And this is from 2354 from the Catechism. Pornography consists of removing real or simulated sex acts from the intimacy of the partners in order to display them deliberately to third parties. It offends against chastity because it perverts the conjugal act, the intimate giving of spouses to each other. It does grave injury to the dignity of its participants, since each one becomes an object of base pleasure and illicit profit for others. It immerses all who are involved in the illusion of a fantasy world. It is a grave offense. Civil authorities should prevent the production and distribution of pornographic materials. And again, that is in the Catechism 2354.
Right. In a simpler way, too, I would kind of boil that all down to pornography is any kind of either visual or written stimulation that somebody uses in order to change their brain chemistry.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting one. Yeah, for sexual pleasure, because we do know that, I mean, I don't know that there's any other pleasure. Is there changing the brain chemistry that I can't think of anything?
Well, yeah.
Can you?
To change the brain chemistry through
sexual
pleasure.
Yeah. And and Peter Kleponis, in his book Integrity Restored, throws in, it is devoid of love, intimacy, relationship, or responsibility, and can be highly addictive. All of those things playing into it. So our society is filled with this stuff, whether it's subtle, whether it's on billboards that people have to pass going to work in the morning and coming home from work in the evening. I know of people who have seen billboards on the way to work that have maybe been subtle, but yet in the process of their addiction, that is enough to send them to their computer while they're at work. How did we get to this point?
How did we get to this point?
Well, I guess maybe I would say, how do individuals get to this point?
I would speak out of my own experience. When I started doing this work, it was mostly in response to the need. I wrote a chastity curriculum when I came back from the John Paul II Institute. How I wanted to use my degree was to teach theology of the body, to teach people relationship, to teach people what love really is. And when I finished that curriculum and I kind of stepped back from things, I realized that, all of our kids in high school are walking around with an iPhone in their pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got like 10-year-olds who are receiving iPhones for their birthdays. And then parents who think, I don't want to let my kid have a phone, I'll give them an iPod, don't realize that their iPod does everything that the iPhone does except make phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And so our access to hardcore pornography has increased exponentially in the past really 7 years, mm-hmm. 7 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And with that has come a greater amount of individualism and really lack of responsibility for each other in general. And I think that's just in the way we communicate and the way that we operate. And one of the things I love to do with young people is walk them through the evolution of communication in general.
Mm-hmm.
And how when I was growing up, maybe when you were growing up, a lot of people had this thing called a party line phone.
Yes.
And a party line phone was one phone number for about 4 households.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no privacy. There was no way you could isolate. There were no secrets because the neighbor down the street would listen in on your phone conversations. And then we graduated to a phone that we kept in the kitchen on a short cord. And if a junior high girl called me in 7th grade at 10 in the morning, my mom would start prepping dinner. Right?
She could listen in and know
what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because she cared about me.
Yeah.
And there was accountability. There was openness. It might have been kind of annoying as a 7th grader, but that was the way our life was.
Mm-hmm.
Cordless phones made things a little bit more private. The greatest scandal in my high school years was whether or not parents would allow their kids to have a teen line,
yes.
Which would be kind of a private phone line for the teenagers. But now that's just escalated so much that, you know, every young person feels entitled to have their own phone, their own internet connection. Everything's more private. Communication, using Snapchat for normal communication, is just a way of making sure that nobody can ever trace what they're doing on their devices. And this has all turned us more and more in on ourselves. And so with pornography and the sexualized culture, it's sort of a chicken and egg argument, I think. Some people would say that, you know, because the culture is so sexualized, people think pornography is okay. But I actually think it may be that increased exposure to pornography through the internet first and then through mobile devices has worn down our sexual boundaries so much that people don't realize that these billboards are sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think 50 Shades of Grey is just normal literature because they've probably been exposed to things that are much worse than that on their iPhones.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. That's a very good point. You know, when I think, too, how if somebody wanted to partake of pornography in days gone by, they had to go to the store and buy the book or buy the magazine, whatever, under a brown paper cover, right? So that no one would know what that was, and it was kept behind. Now magazines are right out in the open. You can pick them up if you're even going to embarrass yourself by going to the store and buying one of those magazines. You know, why do that? Because you have it all right there on your computer. You know, kids used to see it if they saw it. When I was young, they might come across their father or their uncle or their brother, older brother's Playboy magazines or something. And that was the first exposure, which was at a very young age, oftentimes. I have clients who say my first exposure was when I was 4 years old. And by the time I was eight, I was looking at it regularly, several times a day. By the time I was 12, I was addicted. Now they can find it on their cell phones at the age of 10.
Right.
Or other children who may have exposure to it on the playground have their phones, or I doubt that they're able to take them on the playground, hopefully. But after school, they show the images to their friends. Even if we have a family who has everything locked down at home, or they don't give their children cell phones. Is that what you're seeing too, Father?
Yeah, absolutely. I see the same thing. And you know, sometimes people will say to me that, you know, pornography has always been a problem. This isn't anything new. And in one sense, they're right. In one sense, I really disagree with them. Because when I'm talking to somebody that's over 40 or somebody, some people in their 50s, their story is the same story. I was 10 years old, I found magazines at a friend's house, or I found a magazine in the woods.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many magazines are floating around in the woods.
That's
out there.
That's what I think, too. How does this happen?
I know. It's like there's a little tree that pumps out more magazines in the woods. But they have, that's their story. They were exposed at a young age. And an early exposure is correlated to adult sexual compulsive behavior. So that's always been the case, yes. But today, the difference is that 90% of the kids coming out of high school have been exposed to hardcore pornography, as opposed to maybe the 10% back when I was growing up that found the magazine in the woods.
And
the difference is not that they've stumbled across pornography somewhere, but that they found pornography on a device that was given to them by their mom and dad. Which can cause even more confusion. And it's not that person's fault. I tell that 50-year-old man, you know, his first exposure wasn't his fault. He found it somewhere.
Right.
He didn't wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going on a treasure hunt for pornography. And the same thing applies to the young people today, that their first exposure wasn't their fault. And they need to realize that, because that can be traumatizing for a young person, you know, especially today where what they're being exposed to is much, much more violent than what people were exposed to back 30 years ago.
Right.
My first exposure was when I was 10 at a neighbor's house, and he had Playboy magazines, like, out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
But I could never go back and see them. I might have wanted to, but I could never, like, go back over to that house and look for them.
So you're saying you put your own restraints on that, or?
No, it was sort of a friend of a friend.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
And yeah. So I really had no access to go back there.
I gotcha.
There was no reason for me to go over there. It was just a freak thing that I was happened to be there that day.
But the images were planted in your brain.
Exactly.
The seed
it
was
there. And mm-hmm. I wanted to go back, but I couldn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But today when kids get exposed on the internet or on their iPods, they want to go back and they can.
Exactly.
Or sometimes they get exposed to something at a friend's house and then they go home and they try to find it on the internet because they know everything's on the internet.
Yeah.
And this is why most of my ministry is focused towards encouraging and teaching parents to put the proper controls in place for parents to have these conversations with each other. And to really do whatever they can to protect the light of Christ in the hearts of their children. Because if we can prevent early exposure from happening,
mm-hmm.
then we actually have a chance of changing the culture.
Right. We do. But we know, I think, to prevent that first exposure, we can prevent it in the home, but we don't all live in a bubble. And these kids have to go out into the world to go to school, or they live in neighborhoods. And there's so much that parents can do to protect, but yet they can't keep everything completely clean because the kids are going to interact with other children who probably have been exposed. So that's why it's so important to have those conversations with the children. I just want to reintroduce you here just a second, Father, take a little break here. My guest is Father Sean Kilcawley. He is the director of the Office of Family Life and Evangelization for the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska. And he has also become really very much a priestly expert in the field of pornography. He does so much work with Integrity Restored and so many other areas where he's connecting ministries, apostolates across the nation to help preserve family life and to raise children really in the love of Christ and for those children to know their own dignity from the very first years of their life. I wanted to throw in a couple statistics here, Father, that the largest single population of internet pornography users, this is a frightening statistic, and I think every parent needs to know this. The largest single population of internet pornography users are 12 to 17-year-olds, and that two-thirds of college men go online weekly to search for pornography. If that isn't a setup for addictions and the devastation that comes from those addictions, I don't know what is. So what do you have to say about that?
No, that's absolutely what motivates me in my mm-hmm. pastoral work. So many young people think, you know, this is just something fun or it's just something for now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the men that I work with that pornography's ruined their marriages, they started off as a college student that just thought it was a way of helping them to go to sleep at night.
Yeah, or people joke about it, college guys joke about mm-hmm. it, college girls joke. We're talking mostly men here, but it's not just men.
Right.
Women are addicted just as easily as
right.
men, maybe in a different way for different reasons. But
yeah, and so yeah. many of them think that they're just going to stop when they get married.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they might think, well, I'll stop when I have children.
Yep.
And then they might think that I'll stop, you know, the next level. And this is the same thing that, you know, we as when the young men are going to the seminary, and I give this talk to seminarians that, you know, they're bringing this in to the seminary from their high school years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they always think when I go to the seminary, then I'll stop.
Mm-hmm.
But then after, you know, they might relapse while they're in the seminary, and then they think, well, when I go to theology studies, I'll stop. Mm-hmm. When I become a deacon, I'll stop. When I become a priest, I'll stop. But for all of us, you know, we stop when we decide to stop.
when we
start taking the right steps.
Yeah. And unfortunately, sometimes it's something devastating that has happened to them before they realize. It's kind of like any addiction. You know, oftentimes it's the rug has to be pulled out from underneath of you before you realize, oh, okay, it's the time to stop. And as a therapist, it's so heartbreaking for me to sit with men or women who say just exactly what you said. When I get to the next stage, I'll stop. Or when I get to this point, I'll stop. Or that. And then it's like, I can't stop. That even if they have stopped viewing the images are seared in their brains, and it affects their relationships. It affects how they view other people of the opposite sex or even of the same sex. I mean, pornography, same-sex pornography isn't just viewed by people who are attracted to the same sex.
No, it's not. And I think it was Dr. Kevin Skinner who said, he talks about arousal template and how our arousal template is usually affected by either our first or our worst exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I often find this, that the kind of pornography people look at is related to the first kind of pornography that they saw.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's related to the worst sexual experience that they've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And so with a lot of young people who are exposed to this at a young age, and it opens up their arousal template, that creates a lot of questions for them about who they are, what they're attracted to.
Yes.
What that means about them as a person. They forget that their identity is to be a beloved son or a daughter, and they start thinking their identity is whatever they're attracted to or aroused by.
Right.
And it's causing a great amount of confusion for young people. And it's another reason for, you know, us to do whatever we can to limit that first exposure,
mm-hmm.
and to also be evangelists to other families, about limiting that first exposure and educating our kids on what to do when they see something when they've seen something that's inappropriate, that they always would go to their parents and tell them about it.
So what do you have to say to parents of young children? How can they best protect those children?
Well, the first and minimal thing to do is to make sure you're filtering your internet at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many parents don't filter their internet at home. Or they might say, my kids aren't old enough yet to filter my internet at home.
Mm-hmm.
Which to me is like saying, I can keep the Playboy channel on my cable until my kids are old enough that I want to get the Playboy channel off my cable.
Yeah, and so what age would that even be?
It doesn't mean they're watching the Playboy channel.
It's like
there.
2-year-olds can still be there. They've still got eyes and ears.
Exactly.
You know, if their parents are watching the Playboy channel. And,
yes.
Yeah.
So I would recommend that they... that they start filtering their internet, period,
mm-hmm.
in their household. And I also recommend Covenant-ize filtering and accountability software.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are lots of different programs out there, but I found that the way that Covenant-ize works, it gives us the best shot at teaching virtue,
mm-hmm.
because you can set up Covenant-ize for a different filtering level for every child in the home. And it always sends an accountability report, which is simply a way of capturing the history and sending it in an email to whoever somebody's accountability partner is.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 15-year-old in the same household, all of them get filtered at a different level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like giving them a longer leash as they grow up, so that by the time they leave home, what we want is that they're just on accountability. We're not putting up fences anymore, but they've mm-hmm. developed the virtue to go to the right places and to stay out of trouble and make the right choices.
Yeah. So here's my question, Father. The kids have cell phones
mm-hmm.
in 5th grade, 6th grade, whatever. And so Covenant Eyes also has the ability to filter and be accountable on their cell phones as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so it goes on their iPhones, it goes on their iPads, it goes on their Kindle Fire, it goes on your home computer, and there's a unique login for each child, and also for mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's really important that parents don't ask their children to, you know, hold
right.
standards that they're not willing to hold themselves.
It's not even possible.
Mm-hmm.
If the parents are eating the garbage They're giving the garbage to their children in one way or other, even if they have all of this accountability for their children. What is it worth if the parents aren't living the life and really subscribing to it themselves?
Yeah, and it also can help to enhance their marriage because they might just realize that they spend a lot of time on Pinterest or they spend a lot of time on their fantasy football league. Mm-hmm. And I think husbands and wives in marriage really should be accountable to each other and not have secrets from each other. The internet is just a place where we keep secrets from people.
Yeah.
And we kind of use it to escape from people or avoid relationships. And Covenant Eyes, their motto is, we bridge the gap between technology and relationships.
Such a great thing, Father. You know, I really want to have you back, and we can talk maybe more about pornography's impact on marriages or pornography's impact on the individual, because that stuff is very real. And I think until we can tell 17-year-olds who have already seen this, don't go further, because this is what is down the road for you. Unfortunately, we have to end the program for today because we have run out of time, and I'm so sorry about that. Would you close us out with a blessing, Father?
I will, and thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you.
And through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary, St. Joseph, and all the saints, may the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit descend upon you all and remain with you forever.
Amen. Thanks so much. Father Sean Kilcawley has been my guest today. He is the director of the Office of Family Life and Evangelization for the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska. Can't wait to have him back again. God bless you all. And until next time, keep it tuned to St. Gabriel Catholic Radio.
Family Sanctuary is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Family Sanctuary with Marianne Jepson and Peggy Hartshorn are available at stgabrielradio.com.